היו 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 שני חברים, אחד רב תוראי, השני חייל פשוט, אחד רב תוראי, השני חייל פשוט. פתאום שרק הדור, פתאום שרק, פתאום שרק הדור, פתאום שרק הדור, אחד מהם נפל, פתאום שרק הדור, אחד מהם נפל.
הושעתי לו, הושעתי לו יהדי, הושעתי לו, הושעתי לו יהדי,
הושעתי לו ידי, את היד הוא לא לקח, הושעתי לו ידי, את היד הוא לא לקח.
ירקתי לו, ירקתי בפניו, ירקתי לו, ירקתי בפניו,
ירקתי בפניו, את הרוק הוא לא מחה, ירקתי בפניו, את הרוק הוא לא מחה.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if the meeting is being held.
Rise and shine, because it's time to wake up the neighborhood here at KBOO. When you help support KBOO now between September 21st, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $11,000. Just go to kboo.fm/give and become a member of grassroots community radio that you've grown to.
Hey, we're Los Lonely Boys, and you're listening to KBOO.
And now it's time for First Voices Radio with Teokasin Ghost Horse.
Land, air, and water, it's nature's law. First Voices Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspectives of indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law. Land, air, and water, the oldest way of living with Mother Earth and not on Mother Earth.
Ambeto Wastelo Chante Waste na Patriots of the Yellow, Le Unki Piki, Te Wastelo. Greetings, good day, and I welcome you, my relatives. And I shake your hands with a good heart. It's good for all of us to be here. Since 1992, this is First Voices Radio, National, International, and I'm Teokasin Ghost Horse, sending you greetings and strength from the highlands of the Esopus in the lands of the Muncie speaking Lenape. First Voices Radio is an all-Native hosted, all-Native produced by Liz Hill, a member of the Red Lake Ojibwe Nation. Well, something that we don't talk about, we hear the news goes by, here meaning the U.S., the global north, and we don't hear enough about what's happening in Brazil. We hear the political slants and you know, maybe the victimization of Native people. And we think, well, that's there. That's not here, at least in the U.S. But I think there's another aspect to this. When Brazil, which is the Amazon, the land of many indigenous peoples and the wildlife there, have to go through this. Brazil is suffering another terrible fire season with Sao Paulo state, the Amazon, and the Pantanal wetlands recording massive blazes, and climate change and deforestation making things worse. That would be a question. And over the last week, 2,700 fires have ripped through Brazil's southern Sao Paulo state. More than 40 communities were on high alert, the state capital, another shrouded in heavy gray smoke. As far as I know, the 59,000 hectares or 146,000 acres have been destroyed by the flames, which is about an area about the size of Chicago. Included sugarcane fields, one of the country's top exports. So I wanted to include this aspect here. We are paying attention to how this economy is affected, how the Brazilian economy is affected, but we're not getting to the core of the situation. We're worried about losing money. And people could say that the federal police also say they suspect arson is to blame for the fires in different locations at the same time. And we don't know, but there is tinder dry vegetation in a region that hasn't seen rain for months. So I want to leave it right there and go to our guest who's been on First Voices Radio over a few years now. And we have traveled together and actually witnessed some of the devastation of lands in Australia and other places. His name is Charles Lyons, who is a multimedia journalist and filmmaker. And his latest adventure, sometimes called a biography, is that he recently completed a feature documentary about former UN Secretary Ban Ki-moon. And in 2023, he received a Conservando Junta Earth Journalism Network grant to report on the continuing violence due to illegal gold mining within a Yanomami territory in the Amazon. His resulting article was published in Mongo Bay. Based in Rio, Charles, who is in Sao Paulo right now, has produced a coverage of the 2022 election for PBS NewsHour and the long-form news reports on deforestation and indigenous rights in the Amazon, supported by the Pulitzer Center for Crisis Reporting. And he's written editorials for the New York Times, suicides among the Guarani tribe in the southwest of Brazil, and about the controversial Belo Monte Dam in the Amazon. He has covered illegal gold mining in the Amazonian countries such as Brazil, Colombia, and Suriname. And I'd like to welcome you, Charles Lyons, to First Voices once again. Again, it's an honor to have you here and your thoughts on what's going on with the fires, since you're there almost on location in the Amazon and Brazil. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tiokasin. It's always an honor for me to be on your show and to contribute dialoguing about things, as you well put, that are not in the news cycle. They're not considered big enough to be in the news cycle. That alone is a kind of interesting discussion. Just the mainstream media and even some of the alternative media in the U.S., I guess, feels that the global South, in particular Brazil and Latin America, are not a big enough story when you have Ukraine, you have Gaza, you have God knows what else. You have Sudan, which is also not in the news that much. But what's been going on here is nothing short of apocalyptic. If you look at May was some of the heaviest rains that Brazil has ever seen in Rio Grande do Sul. The iconic image is almost like their version of Katrina and Sandy, was basically not covered in the U.S. There were a couple of stories, but the situation has gone, you know, it's gone on for a number of months. Terrible consequences from those heavy rains. And then, as you point out, this is fire season, and the fires, almost counterintuitively, are worse now this year than they were under Bolsonaro in those horrible 4 years when Bolsonaro basically just broke down the whole environmental licensing structures and allowed free reign, not only for illegal gold mining on indigenous territories, but for big ag and ranchers and farmers to do what they wanted without being checked. And I think what's interesting here is that Lula got into, you know, the presidency again. This is his third term after two terms and then a gap. And he's got a very strong environmental minister, Marina Silva, with the promise to support indigenous rights, to crack down on illegal gold mining, to bring back the kind of environmental controls that were in place before Bolsonaro's 4 years. But you would ask yourself, well, how is it possible that there are more fires now than they were just a year ago, and the numbers have spiked? And I think the answer is exactly what you said in the beginning of the program, which is that there's the climate signature, there's the extreme drought, there's El Nino this year. And this is where it gets complicated, there's a group called Primero Comando da Capital, which is the largest organized crime group in Latin America and the largest one in Brazil. They have 40,000 members and 60,000 contractors. And basically what they do, and I know this from a couple of other contexts, is they pay people to light fires in very, you know, combustible areas, like the three that you mentioned, the Amazon, the Pantanal, and São Paulo State, in order to clear the land, in order to grow more soy, cocaine, whatever they want to grow. And the problem that a well-meaning government like the existing government has is the same problem they have with policing the illegal gold mining in the Yanomami territory. The problem is it's just too vast. It's too complicated a network. And it's you can't bring in the military because you don't know where these people are going to strike. And so, let me just backtrack 1 second quickly. And that is, I wrote about the Yanomami for Manga Bay, which is a terrific publication, 6 months after the media explosion that look what's happening to the Yanomami families and tribe members in remote areas. There's malaria, there's poisoning of rivers through runoff of mercury, and all these terrible things that have been going on. Let's send in the troops, let's send in the army, let's send in, you know, medical teams and everything. And so there was a lot of attention when this happened. I think it was January of 2 years ago. And it was a big sort of win for the Lula government that they were going to really respond. But my story was about how this then fell off the news 6 months later, and what are the conditions on the ground after the big media splash. And in fact, the conditions were really bad. They were still bad, and there was still sort of infighting of, you know, who could get in there and how do you police this area. And it reminds me, that story reminds me of what's going on with fires. I mean, I was with a reporter named Jane Ferguson I was the producer on the ground when we went up for PBS NewsHour and covered the power station in Pará, which is in the Amazon, the state of Pará. And we were sort of guided by a fire expert who had a satellite images of telling us where the fires are, you know, running. And we went to those spots, but then we actually kept finding new spots that weren't on his satellite, because that's how flowing it was, how fluid it was, that there were so many people, individual farmers, that the guy at the main, you know, National Institute to cover fires and to track fires didn't even know how many fires there were. And it's going on now. It's incredibly difficult to police. And it's a deliberate, I believe, act by organized crime to support big ag and to make more profits. Meanwhile, the Amazon is being turned into a savanna as we walk around our daily lives. The lungs of the planet are getting worse and worse. And if we continue in this way, you know, just one little aside and I'll shut up. If we continue in this way, you know, it reminds me of what happened when I was writing about the Bellamonte Dam. I interviewed a woman with an NGO, I think it was called Gota de Agua, and she talked about how dismantling or enabling the progress of the Bellamonte Dam, the third, fourth longest hydroelectric dam in the world, in the Amazon. It was a 30-year undertaking that they finally got through a bunch of really ridiculous fake science. That enabling that dam was a way of dismantling the whole environmental licensing system that protected the Amazon from dams. And so, you know, since then, which was 2012, they've been dozens and dozens of additional dams. They're not quite as publicized because they're not as big. But, you know, it's just a horrible thing that's happening. Not only the deforestation, but so you get the deforestation and the mining companies coming in. It's not just a dam. There's all other things that happen around the building of the dam. So, yeah. I wish we could talk about, you know, more pleasant things, but again, it's just shocking to me that most of the media up there, up north, doesn't seem to really care that much about what's going on here, because these are very, very big stories.
Yes, and it feels that way. I was thinking about this biodiversity, ecological diversity. And we'll go back to the indigenous peoples. As you know, that's what this program is primarily about, and how they are holding on to what they can with their cultural diversity. And that biodiversity that they understand is being wiped out, as you've been talking about, with the techniques, even the underhanded, you know, mafia or whatever this is, the drug cartels, blaming Earth for droughts, and this is why it's happening. But you mentioned also there's not enough services to really understand where the fires are and how many of them are. But yet there's scads of technology out there, satellites to look at that, but they're not being employed. The technology is there, but that's not being employed to see what's happening. And yet we're used to the progress of wide open lands. The more we can take, and as you said, the lungs are being compromised. 20% of the lungs. And that's a significant amount to somebody. You think about your body, 20% of your lungs are not there. You're going to have a harder time. And I wanted just to update the number of fires, not because of sensationalism of it, but the actual amount and intensity, why there is 20% already gone. Even last year, the fires have doubled. I mentioned something like 2,000 something. Now it's doubled that, almost 4,000 fires going on now. And so I think the onus is not in the fact that we can blame nature or we don't have enough technology. I think it's us here in the industrialized states, the nations, because it's the media. And as you know, media really means something when you're actually given your commitment to telling the truth through written word or any kind of reporting like you're doing through fires. But you can imagine 600,000 hectares to the flames in June alone. Yep. And that's only a few months ago. And now there are 3,480 separate fires. And that's probably gone up in August. That's what it was. So here it is, September. And we don't know because we don't see. But have you seen, eyewitnessed any fires to smoke, anything like that?
Well, I was flying from Rio to São Paulo today, which is about an hour flight. And it was certainly what looked like smoke to me in parts of the trip. I mean, it's hard to sometimes tell smoke from smog, but I think the active fires were not on that particular route that I was taking. But I, you know, like I said, that just a couple of years ago, I was in Pará, and just, you know, we didn't really need to drive that far to see individual farmers just, you know, lighting fires. And some of them are controlled burns, but most of them are not. And they're doing it because they can, and they can profit, and they can get around the licensing. And, you know, I don't want to go on and on about illegal gold mining, but I mean, it's a global business that thrives off places like the global South, Africa, and the harm that's done to the people involved through mercury in the process, as well as tribal leaders who are often killed as the organizers of their tribe because they're most resistant and vocal, has been just such an ongoing story, going back to Chico Mendes, Dorothy Stang, who's a nun from America working with the landless movement and indigenous, was knocked off, and it just keeps going. And we do have to acknowledge, and I think it's important to acknowledge, that the indigenous have been the guardians. They've been the ones that have fought for nature, rather than allow this, what you would probably call a genocide, to continue to happen. They should be the ones that are protected more than anyone. And I think Lula and his government knows that. Between Sonia Guajajara and Wakashana, both of those great women leaders, now in Congress, now in very important positions in Brasilia, but still it's so hard to get the, you know, agro lobby and so forth to take the demand seriously and to stop their violence, their profiting and their violence.
Speaking of profiting or commercialization, this it's indiscriminate, as we know, and that these native people are keeping and honoring the knowledge that their heritage of their people, who are the original practitioners of the medicines. When you look through a native's eyes, and I could tell you this, that everything becomes medicine. What I'm bridging for is that in the United States, there's a certain amount of privilege. And when I think about, you know, are they cultivating this? And I'll talk about this. This is the medicine that some people call Dispanihu or Kamarampi or Nixipai, I think they call it, Uni, Ambiwaska, Uni Nishi, Datum, and Yauna, which is known worldwide as Yage or Ayahuasca. And they are rejecting any commercialization of this, including the bad practices that violate ethical and spiritual teachings of the lineages of Amazonian keepers. So they are really keeping the land, trying to protect it through the knowledge, because they know that this knowledge will help the world, but it's been commercialized. And from the smaller reports, unheard of, unproven, that I've heard of, is that the land is being taken in various parts of the Amazon and cleared to now plant crops as ayahuasca, crops of all the medicines I've talked about, so that it can be commercialized for the consumption of Americans. And here, there's all kinds of ayahuasca ceremonies, and you don't see any people of color, hardly any, or people or native people involved in those ceremonies, so to speak, those rituals. But they've turned it into very dogmatic consumption-based practices here that they have a right to because they're Americans or whatever, but their application is that they have a right to, but they're forgetting the responsibilities that the indigenous peoples have. And I think there's a great deal of separation from that. But your thoughts, Charlie, before we go on out?
I thought you might ask me about the Elon Musk thing. It's kind of strange to think of Lula as a guy doing the censoring. You know, that's not the way I'd like to think of him. I mean, you know, I don't think Elon Musk is a saint, but I think protecting free speech is a very important part of democracy. And so it's interesting that he's taken that position and banned X, formerly known as Twitter, in Brazil. It's big news in the last few days here. I'd be curious to know what you think about it.
I think it's a ploy, a play to insert or insurgency of knowledges of certain technologies. Because, you know, everywhere in the world, not places, only the small few places that are becoming far right, you know, and I think it's just a part of the trend right now. I think that because of the lack of resources, people will become more conservative and demand rights to the land or to at least the privilege of being able to maintain their status quo of better food, health, water, personal health. So things will get more conservative because the lack of land, whereas the indigenous peoples, there's no such thing as conservative or liberal because they're indigenous. They just are who they are. And to make indigenous peoples political is often the work of the capitalist, the colonist, the imperialist, to always see everything through the transactional language they use, whereas Native people are not using, they're using a land-based spiritual language with another kind of communication. So that's what I think. I hope you understand that, Charlie. But I think there's a temporal thinking process and a spatial thinking process here. And spatial are the indigenous, thinking about the whole and not having opposites or oppositional, because a lot of indigenous peoples don't even have the concept of opposites because it's wide open. And that's how the language is when you're in relationship with Earth. Whereas people, as you referred to, Musk and other people are seeing things on a temporal level, that we're running out of time, we're going to do this, and everything is measured. And we get caught up in that. And how much greed, how much wealth do we have, and who's poor and who's not. And I think that way of thinking is outdated. And I think we are going to, Earth is going to push us into another way of thinking, feeling about who we are as a species human.
But I do like the idea of more dialogue than less dialogue. And if we can, as people who live in Brazil mostly, be exposed to certain things, X is, you know, such a big platform. I mean, I can certainly live without it, but there's a lot of information, and that information helps us understand our world.
Just any thoughts about the fires? And I know they...
It's just very telling that the extent of the fires is greater than under Bolsonaro. And I think that that is testimony to how big a business the criminal element is in Brazil and in Latin America, Africa, and the lobbies that probably are in cahoots with them, you know, the ag lobby and such. They're not thinking about tomorrow, they're thinking about right now.
Yeah, I mean, just example of X being banned from Brazil. Yeah, you talk about freedom of speech, but then you get to where that speech is very narrowed down on who's making the more money.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it comes down to. So, you know, these are not pathologies. This is not a cause and effect, because it's happened. We see one problem and then we have to have an answer for it. But the answer becomes a problem and we just keep going on and on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good to see you.
Good to talk to you. Yeah.
And just giving us a thought process here. I wouldn't say opinion or honest opinion. It's just what we think in dialogue. And as you say, we must discuss this. And out of that, this discussion comes other thoughts that the listeners can listen to and perhaps compel them to think differently from where you come from in Brazil, and being originally from the U.S. and my indigenous involvement, not ever being in Brazil, but I still feel like I'm part of the indigenous peoples there in the land, because it has happened here. The global South has happened in the global North, first of all. Now it's covered over. And now it's happening in the South.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you as always. And I learn a lot by listening too.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Charles Lyons. Thank you again, and we'll see you soon, and then take care of yourself.
Hope to see you again. Bye-bye.
You're listening to First Voices Radio. I'm Teokasen Ghost Horse.
Land, air, and water. It's nature's law. First Voices Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the voices of people experiencing the consequences of war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. You can hear the perspective of indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. The voices of the original peoples. Our guests are from every continent on Earth, endangered, unheard, and forbidden from being heard on mainstream and the neoliberal left airwaves, whether it is alternative or progressive radio.
And welcome back to First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasen Ghost Horse. I have a few thoughts about what's happening in the Western United States, as well as Abya-Yala, which is South America to most of you. That in the U.S. alone, there are currently 1,190 active fires as the heat and drought compound, and already dry terrain, mostly in the Western states of California, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Utah, Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, and parts of Texas. Although fall weather is easy to expect, fires lessening where the conditions are those warmer temperatures with low humidity and sustained winds adding to the risk of fires. I'm not including Canada, which is also going through much of the same conditions,
but this is only a small reference to the larger picture of Earth going through a change by modernization, a forcing change by not adapting to Earth's needs, yet only modernity still adapting Earth to anthropocentric needs. In Abya-Yala, or ineptly named South America, are also experiencing modernity's hastening to feed the Western appetite of greed. Our guest Charles Lyons talked of intentional human-caused fires to clear more lands for mining and land grabbing, for planting of crops that serve the greedy Western appetite. And the raging fires in the Amazon have been a serious political setback for Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who is president of Brazil, and he has promised to protect the rainforest and stop illegal deforestation by 2030. Under the predecessor Jair Bolsonaro, the destruction of rainforests reached new heights. But Brazil is not the only country affected by the firestorm, and according to the authorities, there are currently around 22,000 active fires in neighboring Bolivia too, which have burned nearly 2 million hectares, nearly 5 million acres of land so far. The fires are compounded by drought, where sandbanks are rising as the rivers and tributaries of the Amazon begin to dry up. Low water levels affect villages and towns in the region and are cut off from supplies, and authorities fear the current drought could even exceed last year's record-breaking drought. And lost in all the stats and facts of the West, as we like to measure and see economically the cost, the damage, there are peoples who live within the lands of Turtle Island. There are the peoples who live within the lands of Abya-Yala. And I wanted to read this declaration here on First Voices Radio, a declaration by the indigenous peoples and nations of Amazon Basin. And the reference points are a little different as we rid the earth of indigenous peoples, as we rid the land so that we can satisfy that greed in the West and probably other places also now that are affected by the mindset of greed. Here is the declaration. This I received in late August and have been biting at the bit to say something about it. So I chose this time. The indigenous spiritual authorities make a call for the defense of Mother Earth and to life, to governments, human rights, and development organizations, the United Nations, and the citizens and civil society of all countries on behalf of the indigenous peoples and nations of the Amazon Basin. We denounce the violation of fundamental rights, threats to the Amazonian territories, and a systematic killing of human rights and environment defenders in countries such as Colombia, Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, Venezuela, and Bolivia. We demand an end to all the extractive and mega infrastructure projects. We reject projects with profound social, environmental, and cultural impact, such as the Transoceanic Railroad, which aims to connect the Pacific Ocean with the Atlantic, crossing Amazon jungles and ecosystems that are key for the survival of sacred waters, basins, uncontacted peoples, and the entire planet. We recognize the continuous struggle of indigenous women who are knowledge keepers of the ancestral medicine, weavers and guardians of Mother Earth, and creators of artistic expressions that are the heritage of Native peoples. We honor the ancestral spiritual knowledge that is a heritage of the Native peoples, who are the original practitioners of the medicine called the Spani Hue, Kamarampi, Nixipai, Uni, Ambiwaska, Uni Nishi, Datum, and Yauna, also known worldwide as Yaque or Ayahuasca. And we reject indiscriminate commercialization and bad practices that violate the ethical and spiritual teachings of the lineages of Amazonian wisdom keepers. In the name of the spiritual ancestry of indigenous peoples and all defenders of life, we call for the creation of a global alliance of all movements and peoples to stop climate change and to protect the rights of Mother Earth and all living beings. And here is a song for Healing Earth, someone we have rejected and neglected all along. And this is what indigenous peoples do. We think of Earth, not anthropocentricity.
Yo, we know, I know, you know, you know. Love can suicide. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
That was Smokey D. Palm Tree from the album Peace of Mind 2021. The song was called Away From Here. And right before that was an old classic, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. And then
from an old late great cello player friend, Etty Lucky, and myself on flute with For the Earth. And beginning all of that was a healing song from the album Contact from the Underworld by Robbie Robinson, Verdell Primo, and Johnny Mike, 1998. And it was a combination of Lakota and Navajo, or Dene, backed by Robbie Robinson's guitar. I wanted to tell you a little bit about First Voices Radio, formerly First Voices Indigenous Radio, which caught the name in 2002, March 28th, that full moon. We started in New York City. We moved to Bridgeport, Connecticut, Roxbury, New York, and now Kingston, New York, in the foothills of Catskill Mountains or the highlands of the Esopus. But more about the radio show, First Voices Radio, which originally was called, I remember this very well, Exposing the Apologetic Predator, from October 1992, with other names, to 2000. And these were reality checks, a hardline radio program that focused on the survival of indigenous peoples, because even then, 30 years ago, it was that and still is. There are less indigenous peoples now than there were in 1992. But their history is that I began two radio programs associated with and remaining View from the Shore with Gary Wessels Galbraith, who was the former host of the program, who was the founder of the program. And I joined him for a few months. And I later, in 1997, 98, I changed Exposing the Apologetic Predator to Primal Voices. Then I had this opportunity to broadcast and produce in New York City, on Wall Street of all places. So it became First Voices Indigenous Radio to reach out more than just tribal in the U.S., but all indigenous peoples worldwide. And I began airing and through 1992, from 1992. And since the inception of 1992, there have been approximately 4,500 guests from all the continents of Mother Earth, all colors and cultures, without colonialism, religion, and indoctrination of foreign history forced upon Turtle Island and other places, and bringing the voices of the original peoples across Mother Earth, no matter what language, orientation, struggles, and stories, to terrestrial radio airwaves. And I did this primarily because there were Native peoples in the Western Hemisphere, often heard mostly on Native, quote, Native American, unquote, corporately funded radio stations, and their content is usually censored, and that I've tried to stay away from as much as I possibly could. So that's a little bit about First Voices Radio, the origination way back in 1992. For now, I'd like to say Doksha Ake Wachyang Telo, and thank you for joining us here on First Voices Radio. My name is Teo Kasengo.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
El apoyo y patrocinio de KBOO provienen de la membresía de KBOO y del Grupo Internacional de Viajes. KBOO Radio Comunitaria e International Travel Group